as I've never been. Till you put me down. Oh, I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Because Show. You are listening to the one podcast that's a personal exploration on a magical journey of not only conscientious consumption, but also book recommendations, unspeakable events, and more. We have today a super special guest, the man formerly known as Kermit.
Hi.
Michael's here with me, and we are going to go over a whole bunch of stuff today. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Michael, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Susan and Amy have been so busy, and sometimes our schedules don't coalesce. So I took the opportunity to record with Michael. And actually, I'm using his recording stuff. So it's very exciting for me because I wasn't the one who set up our sound levels. Thank you, Michael.
Is that a disclaimer in case it sounds bad?
No. So where should we start? We have plenty of things to cover. As the audience knows, our listeners know that you and I have been dating. We met on Tinder almost a year ago.
This is true.
So people who are married may not know that Tinder is just based on a photo and you swipe to the right or to the left.
A few photos.
I only look at the one photo. One photo comes up.
Really?
Yeah. Do you look at all the photos
before you swipe? Sometimes I do because you want to check maybe they have kids, maybe they don't have kids. Sometimes they're in the bathroom, seeing kind of products they use, like, you know, if they have good shampoo or not.
So we'll see. That upgrade on Tinder is happening in November. However, I'm on Tinder anymore. I deleted it. How about you?
I think I still have an app, but I haven't been active in forever.
Okay.
It's just there. But if I were on it, I would absolutely pay.
You would?
Yeah.
How much would you pay?
Depends on what it's for. Is it per month? Is it per... Because Coffee Meets Bagel, which is another app, they have a beans, because it's coffee, meets bagel, mm-hmm. and you can do certain things with beans, which I thought was genius. So it's free. But when it comes up with someone, it has your matches because it's based on Facebook as well, like your mutual friends. But you can't see your friends or blurred out unless mm-hmm. you pay.
Oh.
So it's like 100 beans, which is like a dollar.
Okay.
So I thought that was a genius way to get to add extra value by paying and making it for profit. So if Tinder did something like that, it might be interesting. But yeah, if you're trying to find someone and you're using that app, why not? What's a little bit of money? I mean, people pay like $50 a month for like eHarmony and stuff.
That's true. So we're going to stay up to date on that. And, you know, last week I was in San Francisco. I had mentioned this to you. Mm-hmm. I was up there and I went into what some might call an adult store. It was a sex shop. And the one thing I saw that I had never seen before, I didn't mention this to you, but they had this stand filled with different colored handkerchiefs. Have you ever?
Oh, hanky code, of course. I knew about that when I was like 17. You've never known about the hanky code?
No.
Oh, well, my hanky code's amazing.
I thought it was an urban legend. So they had a stand of probably five hankies, and then, you know, it was kind of the thing that's rotating. You can turn it.
Hanky code's amazing.
And so there were many, many different colors. Can you elaborate for the audience? What is hanky code?
Well, hanky code is usually it's in the gay community. Where a specific color handkerchief in a specific place equals what you're looking for. And I'm going to make this up because I don't have information in front of me. But let's say I had a blue hanky in my rear left pocket. That might mean that I was, let's say, a dominant looking for a submissive. And if I were a submissive, I might put the exact same color hanky in my right pocket. So it's an easy way to identify what people are looking for. Or there's one, and there are various shades of blue. So a dark blue one might mean I'm a cop. And depending on where you put it on your body, might mean I'm into anal, I'm looking for a blowjob, I'm looking for a this, whatever. And if you put the same color one on the other side of your body in a different place, it means you're looking for a cop, and these are the things you want to do. So different colors equate to different...
predilections.
Yes, and where you put it depends on what you are and how you do it.
That is exactly true. I
yes, it is.
Noticed that there was a light aqua one,
mm-hmm.
means left side spit on me,
mm-hmm.
right side I spit on you.
I'd be a writer.
Yellow, of course. What do you think that yellow is?
I'm gonna say I like golden showers.
Yes. Or I like to give golden showers. Same with brown. I poop on you. Mm-hmm. You poop on me. So, but it was a very comprehensive, and there was probably 12 other colors that I just raced through my brain. I couldn't.
And they're different combinations as well.
No, it's just left side, right side.
But no combinations of colors, things like
that. Oh, blue and brown.
Yeah. I've always thought a heterosexual one might be. Remember when they had the Lance Armstrong bracelets?
Yeah.
Like some code, depending on what bracelet you wore, would, you know.
So you,
in a much more out kind of way.
It would be easier to do it with bracelets.
Yeah.
That's
or
true.
I'm single. I'm taken. I'm poly.
Well, that's wedding rings do indicate. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to tell. On the subject of sexual exploration.
Yes.
Now, from what you've told me, you are a fan of Kundalini yoga.
I am.
And, like, I'm not really sure how that's different than Hatha or Bikram. You have mentioned that it's more sensual, more physical, more. How would you describe Kundalini yoga?
How would I describe Kundalini yoga? To make a story, to add a story that people might relate to as they're your fans and they're married. When I was going through my divorce, as I have been married, my ex-wife started doing yoga while I was in England producing Duran Duran. And I'd always wanted to do yoga because I've always been into esoteric, Eastern, occult stuff. And I was like, yoga is the next like level physically. And so I went to Hatha yoga class with her, and it just felt like aerobics. It just felt like I was getting this body workout, but I wasn't getting a mental workout or a meditation. So I walked into a place here called Golden Bridge to buy incense. And I walked in, I was like, oh my God, this place is amazing. There's something that feels very spiritual about this. So I signed up for Kundalini class, and it kind of changed my life. Because it's much more flowy. It actually feels more physical than the others to me. It doesn't have the heat with Bikram, because Bikram you do in a room that's heated to like 126 degrees, which is kind of crazy. The one time I did it, I threw up, which was actually kind of nice. But and people are fanatics about that. But there was something about the Kundalini thing that just kind of worked with my chakras in a way and worked with slowing down my brain and slowing down my breathing and just got me to a place where I was in this Zen moment, which I hadn't been in any of the other yogas. The other yogas was like, hey, I'm doing my aerobics, that's that. And whenever, still to this day, whenever I walk by like Yoga Works or any one of those places that do Hatha and I see the people coming out after class, they aren't smiling. Like, and they don't, they're kind of, this may sound really bad, but they don't look great. They don't look healthy, you know? And when I go by a Kundalini place, everyone walks out smiling, and they look amazing. Like, there's a glow about them. So I was like, oh, this is my place. Plus, why not be in a yoga place with the most beautiful woman in Los Angeles? Unfortunately, the first year I did it where I was going five or six times a day, I made a five or six times a week, I made a vow to myself after my separation that I wasn't going to sleep with anyone, have sex, be intimate, date for a year. So I just did yoga once a day and looked at beautiful girls and didn't act on it, which is probably for the best. I highly recommend taking a year off after divorce.
Or 5 or 6 months.
Whatever feels right for you.
For some people, 4, 5, 6 months of taking a break may be enough. But that isn't what
some
I want.
Some might not need any time off.
Perhaps.
They've been out of their marriage for a few years and they're mentally.
Yeah.
And they're ready.
Everyone's right. Different. But that wasn't the, there's a little bit more to your yoga story. I guess it's not a long.
So I mentioned this before and you were like, ooh, the only time that I felt two things. Once was kind of an LSD mushroom experience, not on LSD or mushrooms. Not saying I've done them, but was doing Kundalini yoga. Where I was sitting there and all of a sudden I had this experience I can't explain. And I did that again, and I had the same experience, but it ended up with me having an orgasm. And it was crazy. And my Kundalini friends were like, oh my God, that's called a Kundalini awakening. That's what we strive for. So, but it was really bizarre to have an orgasm while not doing anything sexual. And then...
Wait, I have questions.
Oh yeah.
So what were you doing? Were you in a pose and you were holding the pose for a long time? And then it was just like...
I wasn't actually. So in Kundalini yoga, you do your exercises.
Okay.
Your poses and such. And the thing I like about Kundalini is there's no right and wrong. With Hatha, people are positioning you for certain positions. Kundalini is like, here's what we're doing. Do it to your ability. It's kind of amazing because I'm that kind of guy. And then Shavasana afterwards, where you're laying back and just laying down with the blanket over you while the leader is playing gong, which the gong is washing over you, and it's amazing. Whenever vibrations were going on, all of a sudden it was just like, bing, orgasm. It was crazy. It was, I can't explain it.
Wow. Well, I'm going to ask you about another thing you might not be able to explain. What is this? You know, I've heard in the circles of the Los Angeles hipsters and A-listers, there's something called ayahuasca. It is a hallucinogenic tea that people are drinking. We actually read an article in the New York Times.
It is a hallucinogenic
months
tea.
Months ago.
Created by the ayahuasca vine and another vine. And it's been around for thousands of years in the Amazon. And shamans have... imparted this wisdom and led people on this journey. And it's, you know, it's connecting with Mother Earth in whatever way that is.
Well, but I'm under the understanding that, like, if you take it, you throw up and you're not supposed to eat meat for 30 days and it's aggressive to your system. So volatile that it makes you throw up.
Well, what's happening is that the ayahuasca vine actually is a MAIO inhibitor. So what it does is it basically says, hey, take this stuff into your body, because normally we reject it. Because, you know, it's all based upon DMT, which is naturally occurring in our brain or pineal gland. And don't hold me to any scientific, you know, standard with this. So basically your body would normally purge it immediately. So the ayahuasca vine creates the inhibitor, which lets it, the actual Mother Earth, let's say, sink into your body. And then eventually it wears off and then you purge. And... it's kind of an amazing purge, I must say, as someone who's done that.
Well, speaking of an amazing purge, sort of along these lines.
That's a new porn movie, The Amazing Purge, and it's this whole. Oh, I've got a whole porn game now.
Well, as long as we're talking about, like, taking things into your body, let's talk about Soylent.
Soylent.
Yeah, because that's sort of similar, that somebody was, or that people are trying to adjust and tweak their intake to maximize in some way, not necessarily like their spiritual gains, but physical gains. Because
which equals spiritual gains.
Soylent, probably not very many people know about because it's just starting. It was a Kickstarter thing, right?
It was a Kickstarter thing, yes. And I saw it because... I read an article with the guy who started, who was a 23-year-old engineer, who was like, I'm spending all this time programming, why do I have to take a break to eat? That seems ridiculous. And he's like, if I can program something and create something, why can't I program exactly what the body needs in some kind of food that gives you all the nutrition you need and exactly what, you know, the FDA says you need? Is it FDA? FDA, I think, yeah. So he created this powder, and over 6 months of experimentation, come up with what he called Soylent. He open sourced it and gave out, here's my recipe, everyone can tweak it. And then he did a Kickstarter. And I saw it because I was like, you know what? Who wouldn't want a month of food for $200? But more of, I like eating food. I love eating food, actually. But if this guy can come up with a very cheap way to create a powder that we could send to Africa or places, you know, Alabama. Alabama has poverty issues and food issues. If we can send wherever, why not support someone who's trying to create something good in the world? It may be for selfish reasons. Oh, I don't want to eat. I don't want to spend the time eating. But if he stumbles upon something that actually can change the world, because in the end, that's what we all want, is to do something to change the world. What's $200 to this guy? So eventually it got picked up by Wired and all these people, and it became this thing. And I actually have a month of it sitting there that I'm scared to actually eat.
So you haven't tried it yet?
I haven't tried it.
Because
I might sell them on the black market because it's worth like four times as much now.
Because it's supposed to, I would imagine it's sort of hard to adjust.
I think the first week is hard to adjust. And then the people were like, after the first week where it was just like gas, which I think they just tweaked it to not have gas, as much gas. Everyone's like, you know, I've been on it for a year and it's great. You know, a lot of people,
a year?
Yeah. I mean,
wow.
People use it forever because it gives you everything you need. The only thing it doesn't give you is the tactile sense of eating. You know, you're drinking this milkshake, you know? And unlike Ensure and all those others that they give to people in the hospital, I think it has where those do specific things for your body depending on what you need. This kind of gives you everything you need. People love it. People who take it love it. But, you know, that goes along the whole Tim Ferriss, everyone biohacking their body. You know, that's the new hot thing. So, why not? I mean, in one sense, if I can, I calculated one day, I spend 3 hours a day eating, you know?
You mean 3 hours a day sitting in restaurants?
yes, or reading or something. And 3 hours a day is a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, life is short. Why do you, sometimes you're like, I just want to have the maximum amount of nutrition in the least amount of time and then go back to what I was doing.
So Soylent is sort of another degree of this biohacking tweaking to get the maximum potential out of your body in very much the same way Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Body book does. And I know you're a fan of that.
Of course.
What does that advocate? That's a proponent of what, working out for 4 hours a week?
It's more of how do you maximize your body in the minimum amount of time?
Are you maximizing your body in the minimum amount of time these days?
No, I'm not. I'm not, and I should.
Okay.
The whole 4-hour thing concept started from the 4-hour work week.
Right.
Which was basically, how can I create my life so I work 4 hours a day and automate as much as possible? 4 hours a week, sorry. So I automate things as much as possible and maximize my financial position so I could also maximize my living life and enjoying life. And Tim Ferriss is the guy who is like, I want to become a world champion kickboxer, which I think he did in whatever weight range, because there's a circle, and he has realized that you could just run up to the guy and push him out of the ring and win. And no one expected that, so he kept pushing his opponents out of the ring instead of actually fighting them, and became like a world championship kickboxer.
Okay.
And so he hacked, how do I learn a language easier? And when you read how he learned Japanese, you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And he basically comes up with ways to hack his life to make things, to make learning faster, to make automation of his life faster, to make weight loss faster, weight gain faster, anything. It's kind of amazing.
What do you think he does with all this extra time, that he's doing everything faster? So he's like...
Well, how I came across Tim Ferriss, which someone just sent me a thing about it, was like, oh my God, I didn't know this, is that, who was it sent me a thing? I can't remember. Where he traveled the world with 2 pairs of underwear.
I sent you that.
That was you. So I came, and I forget, flash packing. I think he was the first person I read who was flash packing, which led me to his blog, which led me to the 4-hour work week, where basically he's like, you know what? I go to the airport. I pick where I want to go. I have a small backpack that has everything I need, and here are the various 10 items I take. And he's like, and I travel the world. You know, there's a whole thing of, if you have a job that you don't need to be in one place, why would you be in one place? If you're a web programmer, you don't need to be in an office. You don't need to be at your house. Why not take a computer, go to Belize, hang out for 3 weeks for no money, do the same job you're doing there? Because you can use Skype. You can use, free conference call. You can do everything via telecommuting. Why would you ever, if you can do that and you're young, why would you want to be in,
Des Moines, Iowa? I can think of plenty of reasons.
Why?
You just made all the Des Moines, Iowa listeners mad. But because...
I love Des Moines, Iowa. Habit. The Quad Cities. Ooh, great.
And routine are comforting, and familiarity is nice.
But at some point...
And like,
when you're 40, you're not going to be able to do those explorations. So why not?
But you may not want to. So, not everybody's go, go, go.
Yeah.
Listeners, let us know. Write in and email, Facebook us. Would you feel the need to be on the go? Or perhaps would you prefer, if you're an introvert, a quiet type who likes to curl up with a book in your own bedroom, not traveling to Belize
but why not go to Paris for 2 months and curl up in your bed in Paris and be able to pop down and have a great glass of wine and such?
Because all your friends are in Des Moines. I'm just saying,
come back, we'll get great stories.
That may work for Tim Ferriss. I feel like he's a little bit of a huckster.
And it doesn't work for everyone, clearly.
Okay, it doesn't work for everyone.
But the ideas he presents are great ideas and explorations. It's the whole testosterone thing. You know, where he's like, he explores raising your testosterone and found out that by having 3 Brazil nuts a day and 1 cod liver fish oil, he raises testosterone way more than any of the commercially available doctor suggested ways. And you know how they have the whole testosterone, like go to Dr. Testes and stuff. That's a very expensive thing, where he's like, look, I did this experiment. I did all this crazy stuff. And I found out that the easiest way to raise my testosterone was simply 3 Brazil nuts a day with this 1 cod liver oil. And he does the test over and over to show you that this is what works and it's repeatable. So why would you do this when you could do that for $30 a week?
Okay.
At most.
And you have done that, right? You
absolutely.
Did the 3 Brazil nuts.
I had to stop.
How'd it work? It was so great, you had to stop.
I was so great, I had to stop. Because I got so aggressive and I got so overly sexual that people were responding to me in a completely different way. That at the time in the relationship I was in, it was just too much. Like, I didn't need to be any more aggressive and any more sexual and any more... it was too much. It's hard to explain, but it was too much. That said,
so you should cut down to 1.5 Brazil nuts.
I should.
Yeah. Now we're going to move on. We're going to move away from biohacking, body maximizing, and into books. We have some books on the horizon that I want to talk about. One is, now you're a fan of Joan Didion, right?
I am.
So apparently her nephew, Griffin Dunn's son, is wanting to do a documentary about her and is raising money on Kickstarter. Have you heard about this?
I haven't, but that's a great idea. And it's great doing a Kickstarter.
And then part of the rewards, the things that are, what do you call them? When, you know, you meet the certain goal, financial goals, and then the people who are investing get like little perks.
Rewards, perks.
Perks.
It's called perks.
Okay, so some of the perks, if you invest in the Joan Didion documentary, is that if you, you know, for $100, you can get a photocopy of one of her recipe cards, you know, French onion soup.
Nice.
Y'all, and the most, one of the higher end one is for $2,500, you can get a pair of her sunglasses.
That's kind of cool.
I mean, she must have, I don't know, she must have a few pairs, at least five,
yeah,
six,
I've,
seven
a,
pairs
of sunglasses. One of my favorite photos of anyone is this photo where she looks so beautiful and she's wearing a pair of sunglasses. She might have been about 30.
Big,
yeah,
round sunglasses.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, so I guess she kept all her sunglasses and now she's willing to give them out. And now there's something called Nurture Shock, a book that came out in 2009.
Great book. Classic.
And
based on a New Yorker article he wrote, which is chapter one.
So this book is new to me. I picked it up at the library. I've just started reading it. It seems like it's the chapters are different articles, different. Did they just take their magazine articles and compile it into
a book? The first one, okay. The first chapter was a magazine article in the New Yorker. And then from that, people were like, oh my God, that's revolutionary thinking. You should write a book. And so they extended their research to the rest of the, to create the other chapters in the book. And it's amazing.
Okay, well, for people who have kids, they might find this book interesting because it does have some concepts that are perhaps new to parenting. They're new to me.
They are, but they're basic when you think about it, because when I read the book, even though I don't have kids, it is a situation where you're like, oh my God, that's what my parents did or didn't do. This makes so much sense to me. I see that they did X and the result was Y, and I wish they'd done A. And if I had kids, I would do A because I want the result to be Z. Such as, you shouldn't tell your kids they're smart. You should tell them they did a great job. Because for me, my parents were like, oh my God, you're smart, you're a genius. And that may or may not have been true. But what it did was it made me scared to answer, to speak up in class for things I didn't know. Or to go to the teacher and say, I don't really understand this concept because everyone thought I was smart. And I didn't want to break that illusion. Where if they would have said, great effort, then I would have been like, cool, I'm going to go talk to the teacher because I don't understand this. Let me figure this out, and then I'm going to do my thing. It makes so much sense once you do it.
Well, no, I have to say, I haven't read the book yet, but this to me seems I'm coming up against some...
When you read the book and you read the data, then it will make sense.
I also got into a fight with my sister about this because she agrees with it wholeheartedly, and she's
as she should.
But I'm reserving my opinion until I finish the book.
Right, and I think it's one of those where people who have kids already, I'm very careful to only give it to friends who have newborns.
Yes,
are about to have kids, because it really bums them out if they have 9-year-olds and they're like, "Oh fuck, I've done that," and I see that, you know. Baby Einstein is pretty worthless. All those things are worthless because it tries to teach you language. The way you learn language is by a kid watches a nanny, a mother, a brother, whatever it is, it watches how they form the words in their mouth. It's not watching a train go across and some voice saying train. They actually don't learn anything from that. And it's actually, it doesn't form the brain properly. So when you look at all this stuff, you're like, oh, that makes sense. But if you give it to friends who have kids who are 9, they get really bummed. Or they don't want to believe it because they're like, how could I have fucked up my kid's life for 9 years?
Okay.
Not saying you have. But you don't know till you know. You know? It's like we didn't know there were radio waves till someone was like, oh, there are radio waves.
That's true. You don't know until you know.
You can always adjust, though.
Yeah, that is true. Adjustments can be made. Just like the adjustments... if a stalker comes into your life, you would adjust things.
You would.
Because now, this may be the last factoid on you that we hit for this episode.
Yes.
But I understand that you and James Franco shared a stalker.
We...
So guess what, guys?
What happened?
Well, after we recorded that, we didn't even last like 12 hours before we broke up.
Oh, no. Oh, what happened, Geraldine?
Well, after we stopped recording, he said, oh, that's funny that you said we were dating. Because in the beginning I said, oh, and the listeners know, mm-hmm. Michael and I have been dating. And then I was like, what do you mean? Like, why wouldn't I say we're dating? Mm-hmm. We are, aren't we?
Yeah, right. For almost a year now.
And
on and off.
He just kind of shrugged. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we had that conversation over on your couch that we were going to DTR, mm-hmm. which is, as Amy suggested to me.
Define the relationship.
We needed to define the relationship. And mm-hmm. that was maybe a couple weeks ago, and it's been sort of sidestepped. And I was like, well, wait, like, let's DTR right now. Let's mm-hmm. have a 5-minute conversation before we walk out the door, because I want to know. And we were both going on our way to work. Mm-hmm. And he demurred, and then I was like, oh, well, like, this is too abrupt. And now I'm frazzled. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
And so then we left, went about my day. And then at the end of the day, I called him and I was like, look, I need to know what's so difficult to say if we're together.
Dating is so minor. It's not like you're like, this is the man I'm going to marry, you know?
Well, no, it was more than that. I wrote him a message on Facebook that mm-hmm. said, I do want to define this relationship because I don't understand why it's such a delicate subject to say, like, are we together and we're not seeing other people mm-hmm. or we're together and we are seeing, it's either are we exclusive or not? That's mm-hmm. what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And I hadn't asked that question in a long time, I guess, because I was afraid of the answer. So he hemmed and he hawed and I really had to put him on the spot, but he said that he wasn't ready for a commitment and wanted to see other people mm. and it wasn't me.
Mm. Oh,
it was him.
Oh.
So
he's a dork.
Oh, Geraldine, he's lame.
He is lame.
He is fucking lame. And
yeah,
you deserve way better,
because if he can't commit, then he's just no good.
If he can't commit, he can't commit, but
yeah. No good for you,
no,
because you want
you.
A commitment.
Yeah. And he is. Yeah. No, you can do much better, and you should, and you will. And I think in order to do that, you need to make a nice clean break from Michael. So you should do that. Goodbye, Michael.
Goodbye, Michael.
Bye, Kermit. I'm going to call him Kermit again.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's got demoted.
he got demoted
back to Kermit. Yeah. That well, sucks though, Geraldine.
It does.
Sorry. Yeah.
And I'm only on day two.
Oh, it sucks.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
Because I had, even though it was a delusion, I had high hopes for us.
Yeah.
Well, and he had said previously that, he liked hanging out with you.
Yeah.
So, it was almost like he was leading you on.
That's what he said. He said he didn't want to lead me on.
Well, he was already.
Right.
So.
And he doesn't know what he wants,
No,
because it seems like in the past he's been like more into it, or saying like, I'm just a one woman man, or whatever. And then all of a sudden he's like, no, I think that he is a guy who maybe could use some more self-awareness and brain togetherness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well,
but it sucks.
I know.
It totally sucks.
So I guess that's all I have. I'm going to wrap up this podcast. I thought as long as the listeners have been in on this ride ever since the very beginning, mm-hmm. they should hear the ending.
Yeah.
But that is that. We'll be back next week with more, hopefully, upbeat news.
Yes.
And new and exciting adventures.
Yes.
So until then, listeners, take care of yourselves.
So it's going to be forever, or it's